Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Do you remember the old Ford Taurus station wagon that had the bonus seats in the trunk that kids used to fight over in the mid-90s?
Oh, really?
Barely had a seatbelt. It was just a bench
people
in the
like
trunk.
That stuff.
And
people
you just rolled around through traffic.
By the way, I'm old enough. We didn't have seatbelts.
You had somebody putting an arm in front of you.
You had the mom arm.
Yeah, the mom arm.
Or
yeah.
If you were in the back seat, you came flying over every once in a while. And nothing bad ever happened. You came flying over into the front seat. Okay.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty then, we're live at Chatter where we're open for breakfast when I'm doing this show, which I'm doing tomorrow and I'm not doing Friday. I'm doing all next week. We're at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest, Jennifer Street Northwest, in Friendship Heights. Do a little bit of business first. We have the Crab Feast on Father's Day because nothing says Father's Day like a crab feast.
Right.
Okay. We have patio seating. This is the way it works. We have patio seating, and you have to make a reservation. This is all you can eat Maryland blue crabs, $49. All you can eat. But you have to reserve. You have to call Chatter to do this. Don't call Open Table.
No, you don't call Open Table.
No, it's Open Table.
You go online.
Don't go to Open Table.
Here's a restaurateur who doesn't know what Open Table is.
Open Table is dead to us for Sunday. Just for Sunday.
Just for Sunday for the Crab Feast,
which is outside.
Jeannie's trying to help you.
Crab Feast
is outside. Now, inside, we have our regular brunch. We have our regular menu. We have everything to accommodate you. But if you want the Crab Feast outside with three separate seatings, you have to call Chatter. You have to call 202-362-8040. 202-362-8040. Now, that's what you have to do. Elizabeth has given me these very specific instructions. The crabs await you. All you can eat crabs for 2 hours. You got to get out in 2 hours. We're not having any campers.
Right.
We're not having people sit here for the rest of time. 2 hours, eat all the crabs you want, and then they'll go digest them by walking.
Yeah,
walk over to Lord and Taylor.
And then come back.
I'll be there.
And have another 2 hours.
Yeah, let's do what you want. But you have to call Chatter at 202-362-8040. That's
where Tony Kornheiser will be answering your sports questions.
I'll do that. All right, so let's start. Barry's waiting. Barry Zaluga's waiting on the phone. The Caps parade was yesterday. I wish I could tell you exactly what Alex Ovechkin said on the thing that was sent to me by Sands, but I can't. Let me just say it was in the spirit of David Ortiz when David Ortiz dropped a bomb on the Boston crowd.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
It was in that particular spirit. A little harder to make out because of Ovechkin's accent, but once someone writes it out for you, you distinctly hear what he said. The parade looked great. I don't believe the myth that sports teams unite cities. That's why I use the word myth. And I don't think there's much wrong here. You'll say, oh, well, it's roiling because of politics. Politics is the local store here. When it's roiling, it's good. Everybody's happy. Everybody has a reason to come to work and fight the other people. But I will tell you that it was thrilling to see that parade, watching it on television. These things, it was nonviolent. It was celebratory. The Caps continue to be hammered, so everybody it makes everybody happy all the time.
I think they're winning the award for hammered after winning
the
something.
The Caps are very, very good for Washington, and as I've said before, and I use this word deliberately, I am stunned at the turnout over the course of close to a month now, building and building and building. I understand there's a bandwagon effect. I get that part. But there's hundreds of thousands of people. Their television ratings are up times eight. I mean, people, if you keep it's like with a podcast. If I get on a certain day 100,000 extra people and 5,000 stay with me, what a huge gain. This could be a huge gain for the Capitals. Capitals could be number two in the city. I mean, they could be. So Barry is with us.
I think that crowd was bigger than the Trump inauguration.
Everyone thinks that except Trump. Yeah. Trump will discount the crowd in a second. Where were you specifically at the parade? Were you at a fixed site or were you wandering?
Well, I ended up, I think, basically about as good a spot as you could be. I was afforded access to the flatbed truck that was immediately preceding Ovechkin Backstrom, Brooks Orpik, and the Cup. So I have no idea how it was viewed on TV.
Good.
It was great. So I had a sense of, I got to around the Lincoln Memorial at about 8:45 in the morning, and they were, the staging area and what it was going to be like, and then turning down Constitution Avenue, and then the crowd you know, the parade was supposed to be from 17th to 7 on 7th on Constitution, then would take a right, and their staging was there on the mall. But there were people, hundreds and then thousands of people, starting at 23rd Street, and then those six blocks, and then the parade route actually starts, and then people are 15 deep and 20 deep and 25 deep, and then you get to the archives, and the steps to the archives are like, it's as if it's a sports venue, and people have jammed into their seats to witness these guys come by. And of course, you know, it's a modern parade, so, or a modern event of any kind, so instead of clapping, you see
cell phones,
thousands of people at once posed in one position, pointed one direction with their phones to get their moment, which is probably cuts down on the noise, but certainly gives them special memories. The Chamber of Commerce ordered a perfect weather day. If it had been
beautiful,
85, there would have been people
fainting, dying in the street.
Yeah, exactly. And there was a nice little breeze. I forgot my sunblock. I am roasted this morning. But it was, I'm so glad that I went. And I agree with you that I don't see sports teams uniting cities, but there was such a sense of community and shared experience, and where were you and who did you see and did someone throw you something, and then also the discussions going back years. You know, was I an original season ticket holder? And a lot of those people were afforded spots on buses to new fans who got here late and latched onto this team, and
waited their whole lives, all 17 years of their lives, for this to happen.
But I do think that matters. I do think it matters for, as we talked about, the 25 and under set that
yeah, they never had anything. Yeah,
they never had it, and now they have it. So yesterday, I thought it was a perfect cap to a really remarkable 2 month period of sports here.
Is there a crowd estimate, an official crowd estimate?
Apparently, they don't do it anymore because of all the contentiousness, right. And that predates the Trump inauguration. So there's not. Now, I'd be cautious to people making comparisons because the stage was not at the west side of the Capitol building. It was, in fact, on 7th Street. So there were, you know, effectively seven blocks going up to the Capitol that were blank, and then the stage faced to the west and to the monument. And people definitely streamed as the last bus and the cup from the parade passed by them. They streamed, say, from 20th Street to the back edge of the mall. There were people all the way to the monument.
When I was watching this, and I watched on and off for a couple of hours, it seemed to me that people left where they were standing and just started walking behind banners with, you know, very randomly. Did that actually happen?
On the street?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
I thought people just sort of joined in. But because it seemed like everybody was wearing a cap shirt and everybody had a banner of some sort. And then it seemed, I guess the word I would use is relaxed. It seemed relaxed. You know?
Completely. Completely. There was not, I didn't see any sort of confrontation over anything. And again, I mean, I wasn't in the throng for most of the day. When I eventually got off the truck at 7th Street and walked down to the pavilion. But the vibe was just, I mean, as you would expect, very, very positive. People were thrilled. They showed videos before the players took the stage, highlights, you know, really good montages of all the things that went into winning the cup. And then, you know, we know something about captains in hockey and how important they are and a central figure to what's accomplished. But the captain here isn't just like the leader, the token leader who is a kind of a role player. The captain here is the central figure for hockey in this town. And to say, as he came down and the cup came down,
he is surgically attached to the cup. Ovechkin has had his hands sewn onto the cup.
He slept with it the other night, didn't he?
Yeah.
But he's also, that people are chanting, raise the cup, raise the cup. And it, like, I mean, he wasn't three blocks into the thing when he was exhausted from listening.
I have to tell you this, Barry. I'm real old, and I've seen a lot of parades. I've been in a lot of locker rooms when people have won. I have never seen in my life a player that great as a player enjoy himself this much. I've never seen this. They tend to try to play it off, you know, and act like you've been there before. It's so joyful, and that must infuse itself into the crowd as well, because you must have felt that.
I don't think there's any doubt, and I think it also infuses itself into his teammates, who, you know, finally are feeding off his joy. I mean, there's no, if they had beaten Pittsburgh in Game 7 in 2009 and gone on and won the Stanley Cup, that would have been a joyous celebration and a huge parade, and people would have said, wow, the Caps have slayed their demons, and this is really a blast. For Alex Ovechkin, it is fundamentally different winning in 2018 as a 32-year-old man than in 2009 as a 23-year-old. He has such a deeper appreciation for what it takes, such a deeper appreciation for each little moment, such a deeper appreciation for his own personal investment and all the heartache that he has felt on his own but shared with the city. It's just a completely different way to win it. And I'm not, you know, whatever. It would have been
the only person. If the Nats win this, I'll bet Scherzer is sort of like Ovechkin. But Scherzer wouldn't have had the agony over his career that Ovechkin has had.
Ovechkin became the embodiment of that agony, too. He really bore the brunt of it.
Can I say, as the resident Penguins fan here, that Ovi's completely won me over?
Well, he's won everybody.
He's won even me. Yeah. I mean, it's really great to watch. It's wonderful to see.
Barry, did they bring in the old Caps? Were like, you know, was Langway there? Was Bernie Wolf in a car? Did they reach out to their own history?
Yes, absolutely. And I don't have all the names, so I don't want to be – I believe Langway was there. They had in between some of the buses convertibles with, I would say probably more than a dozen, maybe as many as 20 former Caps riding 2x2 in these. So
honor your history. Good.
Yes. And I will also say in Vegas on Thursday night, Ovechkin saw – you know, Ole Kolzig, who's still with the organization, on the ice, and he made sure that he skated over to Kolzig and handed him the cup.
That's
and
great.
He saw, I mean, you won't know this name, but Matt Bradley was kind of a grinding fourth line guy for the early Ovechkin teams. He's a scout with the team now. He saw him. He handed him the cup. There is it is about this team for these guys, and they'll forever be bonded. But for anybody who's pulled on a Capitals sweater over the past 44 years, it matters a great deal.
See, I mean, I've been here close to 40 years now, since 1979. I did not grow up here. In the time that I've spent here, I would say Riggins has won. Because Riggins won the Super Bowl on that one run, and Riggins was colorful beyond words. But I got Ovechkin close to Riggins and ahead of everybody else now. What do you think?
Totally.
Man, I think that's got to be about right. I mean, we know in these cases, in terms of endearing yourself to a city, a championship is a differentiator, right? So, so where do you kind of draw the line? There are three Redskins titles, so you know if we want to make the argument, and I'm not making the argument today, but if we want to make the argument that the NFL kind of automatically trumps everything, and that particularly in this town, the Redskins automatically trump everything, so maybe then, after Rigo, you put a Theismann or a Rippon or an Art Monk or a Daryl Green or something like that.
I don't know.
They all have titles.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Because they become other Redskins who've won, and Rigo is one. So
I agree with that, and I also think everything that we've talked to this point matters in that the city and the people who have rooted for this team for a long time have been participants and have accessed and shared in this guy's pain and this guy's journey in a way that is different. Those teams were good teams. That was a model franchise. They were set up to win, and they delivered. This team was questioned every step of the way.
100% this year.
And the captain was questioned and even shredded.
And traded. Traded 3 years in a row, basically.
Barry, can I ask you a quick question? I think that I was downtown yesterday not attending the parade. But I was struck by the fact that there were so many young suburban people there, and that D.C. has doubled in size since Tony and I came.
Yeah, it's much bigger.
And for that generation, they hadn't had a winner. It struck me that this was generationally a big difference. In other words, Ovi, there's no question that Ovi is the hero of people under 30 who are sports fans here.
Probably.
Because he brought them the cup.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I've kind of thought of this all along as we've trudged through disappointment after disappointment, and that includes the Nationals and then the cesspool that is the Redskins and the Wizards, that, you know, essentially Michael Kornheiser was alive when there was a Super Bowl title, but it wasn't a formative thing for people 30 and under.
Right,
and now
right.
they have a formative thing.
Right.
And it also, you know, if you take Steve Sands' generation, which is essentially my generation, people who have kids now, my friends who grew up here and are of here grew up going to RFK and the stands would shake, and that's their teenage experience. They so desperately want something like that to share with their own kids and say, no, it really can be fun. It doesn't have to be a disaster. You don't have to root for a team from out of town. You can root for your hometown team because there's a reason to hope, and maybe they'll deliver, and you'll get to go to a parade.
And not bad for a minor league sports town, as somebody I know very well continues to refer to it, right? Not bad for that. Big deal. Really big deal. Thank you, Barry. I hope you enjoyed it, and take a vacation. Although you can't. Are you going to go to Shinnecock? Will you go to Shinnecock or no?
No, I am thankfully sitting this one out. I'll be on Nats duty for a while, probably.
Fantastic. Oh, yes, you can watch Murphy as he struggles to hit the ball. Yeah. All right, well, because he hasn't played in a long time. All right, talk to you soon. Thanks, Barry.
Appreciate it, Tony.
Barry Zwerluga, boys and girls. His coverage has been great. Absolutely great over a long period of time. And I know I've spent a lot of time on the Caps, and I know nothing about hockey, but I just figured, when I tune in the ESPN now and I see that that parade is the first story, I figure that some people might care around the country.
Yes.
I don't know. All right, we'll take a break. We come back. Steve Sands
That's
will join
right.
us on his way to Shinnecock at the moment,
yes.
where he will be at some point by Saturday or some point.
Yeah, some point.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Brooklinen ad, and again, it tells me to talk about the new betting I discovered.
Vasco da Gama.
I didn't discover it, right? I'm not out there trying to sail the world. You spend a third of your life in your sheets. They make a difference with how you sleep. Start getting better sleep with the best sheets. Brooklinen.com, the best and most comfortable sheets without a big markup. You can upgrade your nightly routine, help you feel more well-rested every day. The company was founded in April of 2014. By the husband and wife team, Vicky and Rich Fullup. Their philosophy was the most beautiful, comfortable home essentials without crazy prices. No unnecessary markups and fees. Here's what I didn't know, that most betting is marked up as much as 300%. Brooklinen is the fastest growing betting brand in the world with over 20,000 five-star reviews. And Brooklinen Sheets, I've got a couple of Emmys, but I never was named the winner of the best of online betting category.
It's a hole in your resume.
By Good Housekeeping. I wish I had that. I'd trade one Emmy, not both. Versatile colors and patterns. You can mix and match to complement any decor. This is luxury bedding, and it's underpriced. You have to try these sheets today. My Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer for the listeners to this high-quality podcast. You can get $20 off and free shipping when you use the promo code Tony at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident that they offer a risk-free, what we call a Luke Russert, 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty, that's an inside joke, on all of their sheets and comforters. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use the promo code Tony at brooklinen.com. It's spelled BROOKLINEN.com, promo code Tony. Brooklinen, these are the best sheets ever.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This comes to us from somebody who just signs his name Matt. That narrows it down to 14 million people. Anyway, I saw that you played my buddy Mitch's song, Got You On My Mind Again, last week. As luck would have it, he's in the process of releasing a new album, so I reached out and he's happily sent along a few new tracks to use at your discretion. No need to read any sort of email introduction from me. Well, I just did. Just let everyone know he's been featured previously and in the process of releasing tracks from his new record, Love Is Kind. You can find this music on all the normal platforms. So, this is interesting. Matt signs Matt and
just
refers
Matt.
To Mitch as Mitch.
That's right.
Do we have any further identification of Mitch?
Mitch Bradford.
Mitch yes. Bradford. So,
yes, we have played his songs. I actually have purchased his songs on iTunes. Love them very much.
But I'm just saying that, you know, I know we're all familiar here, but you're helping your friend out if you give a last name so people can go get his music. Speaking of friends, Sands joins us now. So are you in Shinnecock physically, or are you on your way to Shinnecock?
Can I make you jealous, Don?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm about 4 minutes from one of your happy places.
Which?
Rehoboth Country Club.
Oh.
Oh, okay, so you're going there and then going to Shinnecock?
I'm here right now.
Right.
And I'm driving up, right when we're done, we're driving up. I'll be driving up probably in about 5 minutes.
Okay, that's wonderful. Say hello to everybody at Rehoboth for me, and then we'll have dinner when I get down there.
You're the only person I know here, so no, I don't know anybody here.
Well, just walk in and announce yourself. They'll know you, believe me.
Should I say Matt? Should I say my first name?
Matt or Mitch. Matt or Mitch, that'll work. Right, tell people, for people that don't know this, Shinnecock Hills has been an open course for a while. It's been in and out of the rotation. It's a storied course. Describe the type of course that it is for people.
Well, for a non-golfer, it's not going to look like a regular U.S. Open course. It would be a links-style course. Not technically links because it's not attached to the water in the technical term.
Right.
But it will have kind of look like hay instead of thick rough. It'll be long, wide open, massively wide fairways, not that crazy thick rough that's real defined that you normally see at a U.S. Open, that you see normally every year on Father's Day weekend at a U.S. Open. So it's just a wide open, look like kind of hay spraying around all the time. There's going to be some pretty decent wind. The forecast has changed in the last couple of days, so it's going to look totally different than most other U.S. Opens. But as you said, Tony, Shinnecock is an awesome course. You could call it the best course in America.
Really? So, I mean, for people, you're not going to be able to see this on television, because the one thing that happens that you know from the Masters is television doesn't describe elevation all that well. It just doesn't.
Right.
But one of the most beautiful things about Shinnecock, where Michael and I were very, very privileged to play last year, is when you tee off on one, you then walk down. You walk down and you feel like you are walking into another country, another time. It's like it's Brigadoon. You know what I mean, Steve? It's that wonderful feeling that you've gone to Atlantis. You know, you're in a different place. Who do you think, if you think it eliminates people, who do you think, what type of people does it eliminate by the nature of the course? What type of people does it favor as golfers?
I think it's going to be a bomber's paradise. I think it's going to be one of those courses that you don't have to strategically make your way around the golf course. That they've made the fairway so wide, Tony, this year at Shinnecock. I mean, that first tee shot you talked about, how you walk straight down? That fairway is like 40 to 50 yards wide.
I could hit it.
Crazy wide.
Yeah, I could hit the fairway.
The other thing you'll notice that you normally see at U.S. Opens is that real rich green fairway and then the rough that's so defined. It's not like that at Shinnecock. It's more of a light green, kind of a sandy dune kind of thing. When you go to Shinnecock and watch it this year on television, or if you watch it on television, you'll notice it doesn't have a ton of trouble around the greens as far as rough is concerned. They've shaved it down there. The greens are very tricky. But the fairways are so wide, Tony. I think it's got, you know, a Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy written all over it kind of thing. I think Phil Mickelson has a chance because the fairways are so wide. He's performed here very well in the past. I think it's that kind of player. I don't think it's a Zach Johnson type of player where you can plod your way around the golf course. You can overpower this golf course because of the way the USGA set it up.
The one thing I would add, Steve, is that with the native grass that they actually are using in the fairways, and with the players move towards these very very forgiving long irons, you can actually keep driver in your bag, so it's going to open up to some of those older players too, as you say, Phil, the former long ball hitter. So you actually have guys like Phil, Tiger can keep driver in the bag. If it gets soft with today's rain, you might see some more three woods. It does help a guy like DJ, Rory, who are the two best drivers in the game. But look for a lot of guys who you don't think of as long hitters, even a guy like Jordan, who are pounding it out past their normal averages just because of the terrain.
I totally agree, and it could play if it doesn't rain too much today. It's the only day of the week, guys, with forecasts, it rain. If it doesn't rain too much today and it stays hard and fast, because it's gotten firmer and faster the last couple of days, you know, I do think that those guys who hit those irons off the tee, like Dustin and those kind of guys, if they choose to hit driver off the tee, or less than driver off the tee, will be at an even larger advantage. I just don't see it being a Steve Stricker, Zach Johnson type of week out here.
What do pros, and you've had occasion to do this, this is one of the great courses in America, the same thing you would say about a place like Marion, Pebble Beach. What do pros think of Shinnecock?
Oh, man. I mean, hey, it's so revered, Tony. I mean, if you ask any golfer in America, where would you like to play one round in the United States? Forget the old course or the sand belt in Australia, in America. Most people would say Augusta National because it's the most famous. A lot of people would say Pebble Beach. Some say Cypress Point. Some would say, Pine Valley. Shinnecock is right there on the list. The pros adore this place, and it's been a long time since they've come back. Shinnecock was embarrassed in 2004.
Yes.
And the USGA and the US Open completely messed up over the weekend at Shinnecock in 2004, and it took a long time for the USGA to get it back to this storied venue, and the players can't wait. They absolutely love Shinnecock. The golf out on Long Island is spectacular, and Shinnecock is the best of the bunch.
Okay, a couple of personal questions. Will you see and say hello to the great Jimmy Dunn? And if you do, will you say hello for Michael and me?
Yes, I love Jimmy Dunn. One of the great, and I mean that. I don't like to use the word great too often.
No, he's the great Jimmy Dunn.
Great, great people I've ever met. Yes, I will absolutely see him, hopefully. And if I do see him, I will definitely say hello to him for you. We had a real nice piece on him on the Golf Channel last night.
Yes, Michael saw it.
It was with Mike Tirico. It was wonderful about Jimmy's mission.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've done it a few times, but my gosh, what a story Jimmy is.
And will you see Jack Druga, the head pro there, who is our friend as well? You will certainly see him.
You know what? You know, I'm sure I'll see him, but gosh, he's so busy. Tony, I don't like bothering guys the week of. I don't mind bothering them before the week begins,
right,
going into the clubhouse or whatever, just to say hello.
Well, what do you think that's like?
I
guess what I'm getting at is you're the head pro. You got this great job. It is at a storied club. But now you've got the U.S. Open. You've got everybody in golf looking at your place, and it's your baby. It's your babe. What do you think that's like for these guys?
It's every year, every time we go to a major championship. You know, I'll go to Carnoustie next month. We'll talk to the head pro. We'll talk to the superintendent. It is like, you have two children, Tony. It's like it's their third child.
Yeah,
it is. It is
true.
It's like, my father always jokes that the store is his fifth child. And it's so true. It really is. Those guys put so much work in. But then they have to hand the keys over
to the
USGA this week to let them do what they do. But I'm telling you, the 2004 debacle is on the minds of everybody. Shinnecock wants to make sure that it doesn't get embarrassed again.
Right.
And the USGA wants to make sure that it takes a historic venue like Shinnecock and those guys you mentioned and not embarrass them, because they're the ones in charge of the course, not the people at Shinnecock. But as far as saying hello to them, yeah, I'd like to pop my head in, but they're so busy. I don't like to bother guys when they're working like that, but I'll definitely try to go say hello to them.
Okay, let's get to
they
the
have
most
immense pride, Tony. Immense, immense pride.
May I add one thing to remember is that the debacle at Shinnecock came directly after 2003 at Olympia Fields, when the course played really soft and was one of the factors that made the USGA go away from that traditional layout. And you have to wonder if last year's Aaron Hills is going to have the same influence, and regardless of all their planning, if there's a chance that they could let this golf course get out of hand again.
It will have something to do with things, Michael, except for the fact that they're going back to the place where they had their biggest debacle, and it's such a storied venue. There's no way they're losing control of this golf course this week. If they lose control of the golf course this week, everybody at the USGA should get rinsed. And by the way, speaking of getting rinsed, Tom Meeks was the guy in charge of the USGA's setup at Shinnecock in 2004. Mike Davis took the job right after that week. There was a huge change then, and if it happens again this week, Michael, you can forget. They'll blow everybody out of the USGA if it happens again. It will not happen again.
Keep your eyes on number 7.
Oh, man. 7 in 2004 was a joke. It was embarrassing to the game. It was embarrassing
That's
to all
where
the
green, this is the green was linoleum.
This is the Redan, and where they would water it in between groups on the final day, but only if one of the players in the group ahead of you made a double or triple.
Yeah. It was a joke. It was so bad.
All right, let me ask, I think, what is the most important question for all of our listeners. Where are you staying, and how is the toilet there?
Heated, right?
Heated?
Is that the great laugh of Jeannie McManus?
Yes. Hi, Stevie.
Yes. Wow. Hi, Steve. It's Howard. I'm here, too, and I want to offer you my congratulations.
I missed your 10 tweets a night now that the caps are done.
Okay. Well, no tweeting, Jeannie. No tweet. I've never tweeted in my life, but I will text you anytime. Howard,
I mean, that's what I meant.
Great job, Sansa. Right. You brought them home.
You're the best.
Great job. Where are you staying?
Great. I love the we on that. No heated toilet.
Right.
We will not be in one of those great Asian hotels out on Long Island. Southampton Inn.
Yeah.
Really nice spot. It's not anything that you guys would get too excited about.
All right.
If you like Chinese food, there's a place called the Aloha that you should go to.
No, that's all the way in Lynbrook. That's over an hour away.
It's worth the drive.
That's over an hour away. Are you happy about the Caps?
Am I happy?
Yeah.
About
wow.
Yeah. Know, happy?
Gary.
Did you know they
Gary
won?
Gary Braun. Gary. Did they win? Is it over yet?
Yeah,
Gary
over.
Braun.
I told you they were sweet.
I was out of town, Sansi. Yeah. I just want you to know.
I know. By the way, very silent the last 10 days out of Howard. I love that.
Well, yeah. we were in Napa Valley.
Poke the bear.
My wife and I absented ourselves. We went to Napa Valley to drink a lot of wine. But I said earlier,
you haven't had as much to drink as Alex Ovechkin.
Nobody. He's filled up that
nobody
Stanley
has.
Cup.
But what do you now? When you watch the parade, I'm sure. I mean, all the things.
The whole thing. Yeah.
What are you? How does it feel? How does it feel for you?
Here's the deal. Gary Braun said it best on your show, and then when you had Michael on, you said it just as well when you guys discussed it. I've never experienced, and I'm 49. I remember the Skins winning the three. I remember the Bullets winning it. I certainly remember the Terps winning it in 2002. I've never had this much joy. I'm walking around smiling on cloud nine. Everything is great. I've never not only seen this much joy out of a championship, clearly they're having a good time, but because of the weight, because of the anguish, it was emotional. I told you already, I cried a bunch. I cried yesterday. Yeah. I cried listening to the radio calls. I cried with everything, and I've watched the game, the third period, probably 4 or 5 times since. I've never been happier in a sports moment in my life, and I think it's because of the long wait and all of that. I Barry Svrluga and his team have been amazing, documenting it, you guys talking about it. Everything has been phenomenal and good for the players, man. And Barry Trotz and McClellan and Leonsis. Maybe Snyder learned something. Just the whole thing has been fantastic. But the parade yesterday, I'm not sure I would have dropped that F-bomb if I was happy.
Fantastic. Just fantastic.
I'm happy for it.
It was pretty darn good. It was a very David Ortiz at
That's
Fenway,
what I opened right. the show today. You didn't hear it. Moment. Yeah, I opened the show by saying that. It was like right out of David Ortiz. So it was really good.
You know, I'm really happy for you, Steve.
I appreciate that, Howard. Properly placed F-bomb, I think, is
good.
Okay. Yeah.
That's how John. Yeah. That's why John Oliver's the best thing on television, because he knows how to curse correctly. He's really good.
The timing
works up outrage for it. All right, enjoy yourself. Very Say good. Hi to everybody in Rehoboth, and then enjoy Shinnecock, and I will see you within a couple of weeks, all right?
All right, good to talk to you guys.
Bye, Steve.
Howard, you guys be good.
Steve
Take care.
Sands, boys and girls. We'll take a break. We will come back with news and a lot of announcements during news, a lot of things to talk about. People have come in and been very kind to us. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the FrameBridge ad. If you've previously listened to this show, you've heard me talk about FrameBridge. They make it super easy and affordable to custom frame your favorite things, from art prints and posters to the photos on your phone. And here's how it works. You go to FrameBridge.com. You upload your photo from your computer or directly from your Instagram feed, if you have that, for them to print. Or if you have a physical item, like ticket stubs or art prints or posters, whatever, you name it, they'll provide secure prepaid packaging so you can mail it in for free. You preview your item online in any frame style. You choose your favorite or get free recommendations from their talented designers. The expert team at FrameBridge will custom frame your item in days, not weeks or months, and deliver your finished piece directly to your door, ready to hang. The best part, instead of the hundreds you'd pay at a framing store, their prices start at $39 and all shipping is free. I've got this. I've got this up in the house, Michael and I, at the 12th, right at Augusta?
Correct.
At the
12th. Great memory.
It's wonderful. Plus, listeners to this high-quality podcast will get 15% off their first order at FrameBridge.com when they use the code TonyK. FrameBridge has thousands of five-star reviews and even offers a happiness guarantee. For any reason you aren't 100% satisfied with your order, they will make it right. I've got a picture of the five of us owning Chatter. I've got that in the house.
Right.
It's really very nice. Get started framing your photos or art today. Go to FrameBridge, FrameBridge.com. Use the promo code TonyK. You will save an additional 15% off your first order. Just go to FrameBridge.com, promo code TonyK. One last time, FrameBridge.com, promo code TonyK.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is from Rabbi Misha Ben David, who sends us a lot of stuff all the time. The Austin mayor, Steve Adler, and the city council are honoring him with a proclamation Thursday. That's tomorrow. If we come down to City Hall around 5 o'clock, we could view the performance. First solo live performance since he had a stroke. He's our resident singing rabbi.
Yes.
Yeah, he's our resident guy.
The
we
official
love this
singing
guy.
Rabbi of the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Friendly faces at the council chambers on Thursday would mean a lot, so if it's not a major headache for you, please stop by. Well, it's a major headache for me because I'm in Washington, D.C. But if you're in the Austin area, he's going to perform at 5:30. He'll be there most of the afternoon. This track is called I Dream of Walls and Wires. And, Michael, if people want to send in their music, really high-quality music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And are we selling anything today? We're doing the Bootsy One still?
Yeah, Bootsy One. Father's Day is creeping up on you, but you still might
Father's
be
Day
able
Sunday.
To get 2 days shipping.
Yeah.
And this is I've had a few requests from listeners as to outlets that they should look to for some golf coverage. And with the U.S. Open starting tomorrow, I would highly recommend Jeff Shackelford's Twitter handle. He does a lot of great work for the Golf Channel, for Golf Week. And I would
He's
also
a partner with House in a podcast.
He is.
Joe
I would
House.
Also recommend the
We
got
to get Joe House out to Columbia, by the way.
I'm hoping to play with those guys when the Tiger Tournament comes to D.C.
Good.
Area. Get them out to
Good.
I would also recommend the Instagram Twitter handle of @LynxGem. John Cavalier is a photographer from Philadelphia, and he has a great profile on Shinnecock. He takes you hole by hole, and he actually is able to show you those undulations and those hillocks that you mentioned that you can't see on TV that well.
It's just, it's really, really pretty. I mean, very fortunate to have played it. A couple of things. Oh, Chris Spira is here, and he drops
yes.
off all the
yes.
time.
DC Grays.
He drops
thank
off stuff from
thank
the DC Grays. He's dropped off a bunch of
yes,
great stuff. He's
you.
A VP
great
of operations.
Stuff.
He's on the board of directors. This is the seventh year of tribute to the show. Unlike Chatter, the Grays are a not-for-profit organization, although they do aspire to be full service. The Grays are the only D.C.-based team in the 10-team Cal Ripken Collegiate Baseball League, which, like the Cape Cod League and others, is a summer wood bat league for college players, not this aluminum junk,
yeah, it's the
which
way.
You can't use in the bigs.
That's
you can't.
Right.
We are one of the few teams in major summer collegiate baseball that recruit extensively from historically black colleges and universities. The Grays play their home games at the Washington Nationals Youth Academy at 3675 Ely Place Southeast. That's right near Fort DuPont Park and adjacent to the Fort DuPont Ice Arena,
it's a beautiful
where
facility.
Michael had Craig
where
Lachlan.
I was cut.
Yeah, Michael had Craig Lachlan say, get your boy out of
here.
All
caps.
This is not what he does. The website with the roster and game schedule is dcgrays.com. Admission to the home games is free, as is the parking. We're proud to be the official sponsor of the Washington RBI Reviving Baseball and Inner Cities Tournament Program. We also proudly claim the title of the official summer collegiate baseball team of the Tony Kornheiser Show. And we have game-worn jerseys. For me and for Nigel. Mine says Hoff
yes.
Waff. And I said, you have a guy on your team named Hoff Waff? And he said, no, you moron. We put that on afterwards.
It was Jimmy Hoff Waff.
Yeah,
right.
So,
mine says Koufax. I wasn't realizing the
and
Koufax.
And from Mike Playley, who writes, enclosed, please find some chocolate treats from my family's candy business, Damask Candies, which has been in operation in Swedesboro, New Jersey since the early 1900s. That is an exit off the turnpike in South Central New Jersey.
Yes.
His great-grandfather, Arthur, came over from Greece and opened his first shop in Philadelphia. The shop moved to Swedesboro shortly thereafter. Been there ever since. Unlike those regular guys at Harry's Razors, who had to buy an entire factory to start a business, the Damasks bought a two-story house in 1955, still operates at that location today. They live upstairs. They work downstairs. They make chocolate. There's chocolate-covered pretzels, chocolate-covered oyster crackers, which I was told are fabulous, ooh, so I'm keeping those, and the rest of the people here can have some of these things. The specialty is the chocolate-covered oyster cracker, and I've given you the milk and the dark. Be warned, once you open the box, it will go fast. Peanut brittle as well. Very nice.
Tony, as I said off the air, having read a history of Genghis Khan and how they brought tributes to him from all over the empire.
Yes, this is my life. My old life.
You are now the great Khan.
Yes.
Everybody,
C-O-N.
Yeah.
Not K-H-A-N. Yes.
And they're coming from all over the world. Oyster crackers, T-shirts. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Very wonderful.
And we also want to thank Joe Martin and his wife, Holly.
Giving us all this Golf Channel stuff.
Yes, Joe works at the Golf Channel with
Steve Sands. He's Steve's producer.
Yes, and brought us in all sorts of wonders. They were here. They were playing trivia last night.
That's great.
I believe they came in second or third place. I'm not
sure. Is that
right?
Do you know who won? Because I don't know who won. Bobby Gottfried usually wins.
And I brought a couple of T-shirts from the wonderfully named Bullet Hole Cafe on the campus of Gettysburg College.
Where Howard received his fourth.
And I'm now 4DP. 4DP, that's right. Thank you.
Yes. I brought nothing.
Good. But you'll get.
You bring everything.
I don't want anything. I don't bring anything.
You bring yourself all the time.
How about some bacon?
Yeah, bacon, I'll get that.
Isn't that a great ad, the Arby's ad, where the guy with the
bacon,
really deep
the
voice,
meats.
Where he said, no, he goes, you think you have the best sandwich in the world, add bacon. You know, just
who is that guy anyway? He's great.
What do you got? Sure. You have news for us?
Yes, very exciting news, Mr. Tony. Soccer is coming back to your United States, in fact, in North America.
It's a big deal.
The World Cup will
be dead. Well, but it's a big deal.
What I was going to say is I'm hoping...
2026, Gene, come on.
Yeah, what are the odds?
No, I'll still be here.
I expect that Ingleside will have these games available for you. So right after the piano session... And right before shuffleboard,
it's going to interrupt arts and crafts.
I have an actual question. It is tri-hosted with Canada, Mexico, and the United States.
That's right.
Our best friends.
If they can straighten that stuff out.
I don't think Justin's going to want it. You know?
this is an actual and real question.
Okay.
Don't we automatically qualify because we are a host country?
Yes.
Eliminating the embarrassment of us not qualifying.
That's actually the reason
why you guys
did this, yes.
Yes. Yeah. So we do, like, we are not qualified this year.
No.
And this is three down the road. This is 26, so it's 18. So 22, no, it's two down the road.
Two down the road, 22 and
26.
Genie,
I don't know. I don't know about us.
I don't think so.
No.
Not the life after the life we led.
I don't think so.
The odds are not good.
But 60 of the 80 games.
I plan on being here.
60 of the 80 games will be in the United States.
This will be interminable.
All the matches.
So only 20 will be split between Mexico and Canada?
Yes. And all the matches from the quarterfinals on will be in the U.S. The championship game.
So we've thrown in crumbs.
Yeah.
Well, we gave them NAFTA, though. So, I mean, that's a deal.
Exactly.
I think President Trump will take those away from Canada for sure.
He's not going to be around at 8.
The final.
You never know, Tony.
No, he's going to rewrite the Constitution. Yeah,
They have not set this in stone, but the final is expected to be played at MetLife Stadium just outside New York.
Okay.
We have no issue with that, right?
I don't care.
You don't want it to be in D.C.?
I mean, I'd like it to be in D.C., but it's okay.
Right.
You know, get the best stadium. If in the interim they build a 100,000-seat stadium in D.C. and you can have it in the capital of your country, you do it that way. Oh, who cares? I don't care. The last time, was it in the Rose Bowl? The last time, the only time we hosted, wasn't the championship at the... Could somebody on our crack research staff of Marley and Marcus, who are just sitting in the back eating?
What are those guys doing?
Would you do something? Would you find out where?
Don't take my bacon.
I think it was in the Rose Bowl. I think.
1994 when that
was. Yeah, I think it was in the Rose Bowl. I'm not sure.
To baseball, Mr. Tony.
Nats.
Not a great night for the Nats. They fall to the Yankees.
They got Adam Eaton and Daniel Murphy in the lineup, but they didn't. They haven't scored in a while.
Yeah, they
get more than two
games. Scored since Saturday.
I watched that game, and it was like two different species. The Yankees are like
Didi Gregorius hit two out. They're big.
Yeah.
I mean, Tanner Roark pitched well.
Yes, he did.
Holding the Yankees to three runs is a victory unto itself. But you have to have some hits.
Right. Let me just here's what did happen. Bryce Harper reached base four straight times because he was walked twice and hit twice. And I'm just wondering if anybody in the Yankee organization said, he wants to play here, let's welcome him this way. Let's hit him twice. When he got hit on the elbow, that you could feel that pain.
Oh, man.
Definitely.
He went right down on his knees. He got hit in the right elbow, right?
Correct.
And it looked terrible, just terrible. He may not feel that great about New York City and Yankee Stadium.
He also got hit in his right foot.
That was later in the game.
It was left foot, rather. The x-rays were negative, so he is expected to be back in the lineup today.
I understand you need to get Murphy at bats. Yeah, but when you have four games against the Yankees in 2 weeks because of that rain delay, so you start in the sixth inning, the first of the four is the most important. They might lose all four now, and I just don't know why you don't give him those at-bats late in the game, or at least just give him the DH
when he goes
to play in Toronto. Put Juan Soto in for the game as the DH if you want, because he's at least been a spark plug in the second half of the lineup.
Murphy,
and you have a short right field.
Murphy can't hit major league pitching yet. He can't.
Which is fine. But don't put him out against the Yankees.
No. Put him. Yeah, Michael's right about that. That was tough. That was tough to watch. Tough. What else you got?
Andrew Luck is throwing a football.
Is it a real football or a high school football?
Marcus, do you have something for us?
Yes. Marcus, come up here.
Good Lord.
I mean, you're the intern, for God's sakes. We ask you to do something.
Silent intern.
You're going to mail that to us?
You know how to do this because you're a Syracuse kid and you're on the air all the time.
So the FIFA World Cup was 1994, like you said, and in the Rose Bowl.
So I believe I had that.
Yes.
Okay.
Andrew Luck was playing with a college size.
That was Marcus's debut. That could be it.
That was low energy.
By the way, it's as you said, not like you said.
That was low energy, as our president would say. Very low energy.
Tough crowd, Marcus.
Yeah. It was a college size football. I thought it was high school.
Yesterday, I thought he was throwing a high school football, which is great if he's playing for DeMatha.
They said he threw a Wilson TDS 1205 football.
What does that mean?
Which they say it's a college-sized football, a little bit smaller.
Is it a pro-sized football?
No, okay. It's smaller.
So when he gets into the pros, is he going to have to throw a pro-sized football? Andrew, let's let you throw the other football. They're not going to do that.
I think he has thrown a regulation NFL football.
You think, do you know?
He claims he has, but I don't think there's any video of that. So when was his last game? 1993, something?
Been a
like
while.
That?
Been
Since
a while
the World Cup.
Been
believe.
A while back.
Yes. And Mr. Tony.
Yeah.
This is a tough term to use for the Redskins
scabs.
Players. The scabs.
That's what they were. They were scabs.
They went 3-0 during the strikes.
And we were grateful for them that
Absolutely.
Year.
That was the 19.
We had the best scabs.
Yes.
Yes.
Thanks. Was that Charlie That was Bobby Bethard.
Bobby Bethard.
Mm. Bobby Bethard, yep.
We had the best scabs.
But, they went 3-0 in the 87 strike.
Okay, so
and that was the year that the Redskins...
The Redskins won their... Second Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was the Doug Williams.
Yeah, they won their second Super Bowl. So Doug Williams won that. That was in California against the Broncos, right? I'm pretty sure about that.
I'm not sure where the site was, but
Marley
and
Marcus, look that one up. The 1987. Yeah. I think that was.
They're on it.
I think that was in Stanford Stadium, but I could be wrong. But against the Broncos, right? The Broncos were ahead in the game.
Yes, they were 10-0,
35 in a row.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let me just get to this because mythology has grown up around these scab players. They were given rings. And, a lot of people want to say they were mistreated by the Washington Redskins. No, they weren't. And they didn't win the Super Bowl. No, they didn't. Okay, they were 3-0. They helped the Redskins get to the playoffs. That is true. They had nothing to do with the playoffs whatsoever. Everybody was back at full strength after those three games. Some teams, like the Cowboys, were almost at full strength during those three games. Let's not make this in. These guys didn't land on the moon. Okay, they didn't. Very happy that they did what they did, but the actual Washington Redskin team won the actual Super Bowl, and I'm not sure that any of these players, some may have played in the league afterwards, but I'm not sure they were on the Redskins. I'm glad they got their rings, but this is not high crimes and misdemeanors against the, am I right on this one?
And they were playing other scabs.
That's right.
So it wasn't like...
Except against the Cowboys in one of those games.
Yeah, that's right.
That Monday night game.
I remember this so well. Everybody thought, nobody's going to watch these games.
You watched.
Nope, everybody watched.
Everybody watched.
And the league got very busy getting back on the field.
That's exactly. And that was the reason the league got back to the field. But the Washington Redskins, the actual team won that. Do we have clarity on this?
That Super Bowl was played at FedEx Field.
No,
it wasn't. No, it was Jack Murphy Stadium.
Oh, Jack Murphy, San Diego.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that was. Yeah.
And the Broncos took an early
lead.
Do you remember, were
you in sports at that point?
What year was that?
87.
No.
Broncos led 10-0 at the end of the first.
They led 10-0. So that was what we like to call the Elizabeth Buehmiller Super Bowl, if she's listening, as the bureau chief of the New York Times. She came out there for the style section. And basically, I took her around with me to try to dissuade her from her position that all sports writers cared about was free food.
Yeah, really.
You know, okay. So.
George tells a great story about that Super Bowl. The Broncos go up 10-0, and he's in the office, obviously, and with Downey, then the managing editor, I think. They're trying to decide the play on A1. The minute the Broncos go up 10-0, Downey's like got the Redskins at the bottom of the page.
Yeah, and well, it didn't work out that way.
Things got better.
The greatest second quarter in the history of postseason football, probably. 35 points, and Doug Williams became the largest story.
I believe my buddy Mark Murphy was still playing.
Yes, Mark Murphy on that team. Are we done with news?
I do have a story. I have a story about a snake and a story about a raccoon.
Raccoon.
Raccoon, yes. This is the famous raccoon
in
Minnesota.
Raccoon, not snake. Raccoon.
Yeah, trust me.
I have a snake in my garage.
You're going to want to hear the snake story.
Don't go in that garage.
We'll get to the snake story tomorrow. But a raccoon in Minnesota was spied on the outside of the USB building, which I have just researched. It is 40 stories high.
How high up?
561 feet tall.
Well, how high was the...
He was at the 12th floor. And what they think happened was...
So he's just getting started.
Well, yeah, I think he said, you know what? There's some pigeon nests up there. This would be a great little snack. And he went up there and said, you know what? It's probably easier to just keep going up than it is going down. So there are these amazing photographs, and people were documenting them and, of course, creating fake Twitter accounts, as they call them the MPR, because it was a Minnesota public radio reporter who first got on this story. So it was the MPR raccoon climbing up the outside. Now, I did not know, and I don't think you knew, that raccoons could scale the outside of a building.
No.
I guess with his claws.
I've seen them on top of garbage cans close up, and I've walked away.
So eventually, this raccoon, who we've determined...
Raccoons are big.
They are big.
Yeah. And by the way, this one looks like a baby.
Surprisingly big when you see them.
This is a picture of him just on the ledge.
Right.
And then I'll show you a picture of
him. Can he be talked off the ledge?
Well, you know, people were literally like... They were so. And by the way, here's a picture of him. Somebody's office window. You can see him just outside.
For those of you not watching on News Channel 8, you can't see this. Yes. But this is a significant raccoon.
Yeah, significant raccoon climbing up. By the way, we've determined that his name is not MPR. It's actually Rocky, and he's from the South Mountain Hills in Dakota.
Okay. Yes, anyway, he is.
Yes, there you go. But he finally made it all the way up.
Only to find Gideon's Bible.
Thank you.
But he finally made
it all the way up, and is now, as they say, in protective care.
He's dead. He'll be in a farm in Hibbing.
Yeah,
he's
dead.
Chasing rabbits.
Oh, so. But all ended well for Rocky the Raccoon.
All right, we'll take a break. Old Guy Radio, when we return, we'll talk to Howard about the most recently concluded summit. It was like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It was very cool. And now we'll find out what actually happened. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. These are the Rolling Stones. Nigel, would you tell us why we're playing this song?
We are playing this song because this is the one-year anniversary of the death of Anita Pallenberg, who had relationships with at least...
Multiple.
Brian Jones, Keith Richards.
Multiple Rolling Stones.
And Mick Jagger, yes. And
she probably wasn't aware of Mick Taylor, because he was so briefly on the squad.
Right. And when we read the obituary for her, Keith Richards had one of the great lines ever. He said, "I like a high-spirited woman. And with Anita, you knew you were taking on a Valkyrie. She who decides who dies in battle."
The reference to Valkyries is just tremendous.
Just tremendous. And apparently, as legend has it, when Keith found out that Anita and Mick were having a little bit of a fling, cheating on Keith, he sat down and wrote the opening lines to this song, Gimme Shelter. Now, of course, in another story, he says, "No, I was sitting in my window and I saw a storm coming and I started playing the guitar." But it was all written in about 5 minutes anyways.
It's a great excuse to play.
They also tell the story about recording this and wanting somebody to sing this key backup role. And so they enlist Mary Clayton.
Mary Clayton, yes.
Who comes out of her house or hotel, wherever she was staying, with her hair in curlers and a scarf around her head, and is brought into the studio like at midnight to sing backup, where they just would not let her stop till finally her voice broke.
It's alarmingly great.
It's alarmingly great.
And you can hear Mick, when the moment finally happens on the recording, you can hear him say, yeah, you know, in the background.
Just
a great moment.
Yeah. That, I mean, if you asked me to name what I believe, given the entire spirit and history of the Rolling Stones, was the quintessential thing they ever did, I would tell you it's the vocals in Give Me Shelter.
I would too.
I mean, I just, yeah. But Howard is here. Howard is himself. You know, a band master.
Yeah, classics. Yeah.
The classics.
Maybe you were more of a Jumpin' Jack Flash
No,
kind
we
of guy.
We were Midnight Hour for a long, long mm-hmm. time. You know, that was easy to play, so.
So, anyway. Howard is here.
It's only three chords. You know, we were a bar mitzvah band. We weren't,
yeah. That's how you should have advertised yourselves in Pittsburgh.
Well, we did. That's what we played. And the Varsity House, which was a teen dance hall, and we did well. We made $80 a night.
That's great.
That's fantastic.
And all the four pizza of us, you could eat?
No, we would go to Sedini's and have ravioli.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Good job out of you.
Yeah.
The summit, which was not supposed to take place,
right.
The on-again, off-again, on-again, right. Off-again, on-again summit, which apparently took place, I don't know, in 10 minutes, 15 minutes, because Trump had a tea time somewhere, oh, yeah. And he had to get back.
Come on.
This is the hardest question, I think.
Okay.
Because the optics of it are spectacular and all of that. But what you hear now is the criticism that nothing actually was accomplished. I might argue that just the optics of it is a major accomplishment. But I would ask you, as you look at this, what has indeed, if anything, been accomplished?
Well, the optics have been accomplished, which is not totally insignificant. I mean, it's easy to dismiss this as another Trump photo op and nothing more. However, there are moments in diplomacy and world affairs when the symbolism does matter. Now, Kim Jong-il, as everybody has said, has gotten a lot out of this. He's gotten, you know, he's a guy who murdered his stepbrother, murdered his uncle, has 100,000 people in gulags and so forth. And he's, you know, as were his father and grandfather, a liar in the extreme about their nuclear program and all that. But the fact, so he got a lot out of this, but...
But a lovable roly-poly little guy on some level.
But the fact that the fact that he is proposing to be part of the community of nations, in theory, could be a good thing. In other words, you want him. That's a poor nation. That's like the 130. It's near the bottom of the poorest countries in the world. They have no electricity grid.
At night, there's no
nothing.
Light.
There's nothing. The satellites show there's no
light.
So it's a desperately poor country. And I think Kim Jong, having been educated in Switzerland, having gotten around, having, you know, acquired a taste for the good things of life on the planet, would like to be able to have them not only for himself, but I think he recognizes that at some point it's an untenable situation in North Korea. So to that extent, the fact that Donald Trump, who has one of his gifts is his feel for people who are weak and who are in weak position, recognize that Kim is in a weak position, and to mix my metaphors, kind of low-hanging fruit to go have a meeting with him. And so that part of it is good. In terms of the geopolitics and the real politic of Asia, it's not necessarily a good thing. First of all, I would say that there's no change in what Kim has said about his nuclear program. In other words, he already said with the head of South Korea a month ago,
yeah
we're giving up our program.
We're done.
And if you believe that, please. I mean, there's no evidence of it unless you get people on the ground to verify it, which would be extremely difficult because the North Koreans have spent the last 30 years of putting everything underground and testing everything underground in a country the size of Pennsylvania. So it's going to be hard. Secondly, I think the fact that Donald Trump is not a great negotiator, even though he says he's a great deal maker, You know, his background is he started out with a bunch of money from his family. He's never had a board of directors. He's never been a publicly traded company. He does whatever he wants, and he makes it look good. They generally aren't great deals. And this, by all accounts, is not one, because he put on the table the possibility of ending all these war games in the East. He's put on the table indirectly the idea of taking the 20,000 troops out of South Korea. Both of those things play directly into the hands of the Chinese. And I've spent a fair amount of time in Asia, and you know that China, the whole question in Asia is China taking over everything. And the argument is that this will play directly into China's hands. If those troops come out, if those war games end, not to mention the fact that South Korea is not necessary, which wasn't told in advance about the fact that Trump was going to put this on the table, South Korea is feeling a little on shaky ground right now.
The question that I have is, it is well known that that all the leaders of North Korea, grandfather, father, son, have lied repeatedly about the deals they've made. I don't want to say that Donald Trump has lied. I don't want to cast that sort of aspersion. But it does seem to me that Donald Trump, whatever deal he makes, in an hour he says, you know, we're going to revisit that deal. That's not the best deal. So you have two people here of a similar mindset in terms of what they agree to or don't agree to. I guess, I watched all the television shows this morning, and it says, we gave away this and we gave away that. And I said, you know, slow your roll, Sparky. We didn't really give away anything yet, because by 4 o'clock today, we can say we're not doing it.
So in that sense, the whole thing was just Kim and the Don saying, you know, let's get together and pretend we're doing something.
And isn't that in itself sort of
That's what I said.
Yeah.
That's what I said. And I'll give him, I give him credit for, in some ways, traditional diplomacy, which requires all the groundwork and the State Department and all these conversations, are not possible with Kim. So you go directly.
Or with
you
Trump.
You go directly to him.
Both of them are the same. What would
The problem here is that they both have a great interest right now in lying, because they both want to say, you know what, we've achieved historic things here.
Well, this is
when
what
in fact nothing has actually happened.
What would be success in the Korean Peninsula, as we understand it?
Yeah.
What would be not overwhelming success? What would be success of a sort?
What would be success would be for Kim to allow international inspectors to come in and look at what they've done, what their inventory is, and what can be done verifiably, irreversibly, to reduce it. Now, this is the standard that Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, has said needs to be achieved. Donald Trump hasn't really said that. Instead, what he did was tweet out this morning, very reassuringly, this, about 2 hours ago. Before taking office, people were assuming that we were going to war with North Korea. President Obama said that North Korea was our biggest and most dangerous problem. No longer. Sleep well tonight.
And now, buy my beachfront condos when I'm erected.
Well, that's priceless. I mean, he thought that he was going to draw Kim in by saying, you know, you've got great beaches.
Yeah.
And we're going to build stuff there. And, you know, some of that may work. I'm not so... All the experts say that there's nothing to this, that in the light of the morning, it was just a photo op. But I do think there are times when just photo ops matter
Congress.
In terms of global affairs.
I'm willing to try
to be hopeful.
That's happening. Can I go backwards a little bit?
Sure.
What happened in Canada? Why did we start? I thought we liked Justin Trudeau.
Speaking of photo ops, when you look at that photo of Trump seated and Angela Merkel in his face with the rest of the G7 leaders around her, that is
First of all, I've interviewed Justin Trudeau, and he's the nicest, most amenable, thoughtful, and by the way, not a pushover. He's a boxer. You know, he's a big, tough kid.
Yeah.
And if he got in the ring with Donald Trump, that would last about 30 seconds. But I think a couple things. First of all, Donald Trump hates any form of politics or business or public life in which anybody else shares the stage with him. the whole idea of international diplomacy, G7s, G8s, G-whatevers, is abhorrent to him because he thinks he's got to be the only guy. That's number one. Number two, he views the G7 as an economic conspiracy against the United States because of tariffs and so on, which is complete baloney, really. Right. I mean, our tariffs by historical standards and their tariffs by historical standards are zero. But that's his view. And I also think that whatever Barack Obama or the traditional rules and views of things tell him he's supposed to do, like be a good team player at the G7, he's going to do exactly the opposite. He prefers to deal with strong men.
Yeah, it seems
he prefers to deal with Vladimir Putin, Kim Jong-il, Xi Jinping, even Duterte in the Philippines. He likes fellow strong men. He thinks that makes him look stronger.
Strong men, you mean like dictators, tyrants?
Like dictators, okay. Tyrants,
because
and so
Trudeau
forth.
Trudeau could be conceived as a strong man, but...
No, you're right.
Okay.
Dictators, tyrants, and so forth. And he is the ultimate in what we in the trade call real politic. You know, he's a dime store Bismarck, as far as I'm concerned, which is that he is going to ignore the domestic circumstances of these countries and just deal with the leaders. And he's also going to ignore the convention that we've honored since 1944 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. At the end, toward the end of World War II, we said, you know, okay, we understand we need balance of power. We want to make the world safe for capitalism. We want to do some hard things, some hard-eyed, cold-blooded things. But we also want to put up this standard of individual human rights that flows from the Declaration of Independence, from our own civil war, from that's what we fought for, okay? And Donald Trump, the whole idea of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and that whole post-World War II architecture and ethos and ethic,
yeah,
he doesn't care about.
Yeah, he's not he driving said, a Subaru.
He said, let's quit fooling ourselves. This world is not about universal individual human rights. It's the tough jungle. It's like the real estate business in New York, and we got to be tough. The problem is, by putting the war games on the table and the removal of U.S. troops on the table from the Korean Peninsula,
makes us less
he's
tough.
Telling China, go ahead.
Yeah.
It makes us less tough.
Yeah. Thank you, Howard.
Thank you.
That was very good. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll have a jingle. We'll have some email.
That's right.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show. I am an old orange man, a tad selfish and stubborn. So Liz, Michael, and Tyron have decided my fate. A dream of Rehoboth would have settled for Florida. Even a little house with Chelsea would do. They'll take me to Ingleside in the county of Montgomery. So send me some postcards and a big box of that. Just promise me one thing, I won't get soup for dinner.
Well, can't promise that.
Faith-based, engaged living. Think I'll go boil some eggs.
It's fabulous. Sean Montgomery in Frederick, Maryland.
Sean Morrissey. Was that good?
Sean Morrissey.
Sean Morrissey, what yes. did I say?
You said Sean Montgomery.
No, Sean Morrissey in Frederick, Maryland. That's based on the band song, I'm pretty sure.
No, Bonnie Raitt.
No.
Make Me an Angel flies from Montgomery.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Was she the first to sing that?
I thought the band did that song, too. But okay, but that's wonderful.
I think of Bonnie Raitt.
It's wonderful. Faith-based, engaged living. Don't want faith-based and engaged living. Let me thank Barry's for Luga, Steve Sands for coming on the show today. Thank the sponsors Framebridge and Brooklinen. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. Finn and Pineapple Landscaping are outside today.
Getting it
Hopefully
done.
This is going to be
looking good out there.
Within 2 or 3 days, and we were going to have...
In time for the Crab Fest?
Yeah, the new look at Chatter for Father's Day. Neil in Rockville, so you were surprised when you heard about Wendy Rieger's presentation of your picture with lipstick kisses all over during the pregame show. You should have been sitting at the Littles table at Chatter when it appeared on TV. Talk about feeling a little bit awkward. I just thought it was great. I don't know how to get in touch with Wendy. Do we have a number for Wendy?
Yes.
Yeah, good. I need to get in touch with Wendy.
It just works like that.
Yeah.
I know.
Imagine,
I want Wendy. I want
being
Wendy
Carol for that.
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming. I want Wendy to be here and do celebrity bartending. I'm sure she would do it. Is Wendy not the greatest?
She is the greatest. The best. When she was out on the tarmac,
it's fantastic.
When the Caps plane landed, and she was just excited and screaming for all of us because there was nobody
so
else
great.
There.
So great. Charlie Bird, Springfield, Virginia. I've scoured the interwebs for images of Wilbon imbibing with Ovechkin over the past four nights, curiously coming up empty. I figured somebody had to have gotten him drunk enough to whisper the phrase LeBron to D.C. Shad, a haiku. My rally's bigger than your inauguration type situation.
Thank you.
Brian Nysek. My girlfriend and I were going through a long overdue breakup. Somewhere in the misery of her rant about how pathetic a person I was, I couldn't help but start to laugh and simply said, I try, you make me sad. She was not a sports fan and unaware of your show, so I was once again just the idiot laughing at an important moment in my life for no reason. She gave me solace by saying she was sorry for everything and would not be coming back for future business. Thanks to you and the Littles for the best worst breakup ever. I find this happens to me so often in my life. It's a terribly embarrassing moment when it's a very serious moment of import and I find myself laughing because it reminds me of something. And I look down and I start to laugh and I look away and I can't help it. And I know that that happens. And that, of course, is the dry cleaning lady who I made her so sad. And she left. She went to the...
Yeah.
Oh, it's terrible. Jim Flynn in Concord, Connecticut. Tony, the infighting between Tori and Michael over who's a real Caps fan reminds me of the last days of Enron. Alex Lau in New York City. Just when I'm starting to feel happy and good for all the Red Rockers, Tori once again reminds us why we hated them in the first place. Their smugness and superiority is beyond the pale. Only fans that join the team for at least one West Coast road trip can truly know their pain. What's next? You're going to have a minority ownership stake in the team and name your kids Ovi, Backy, and Trotsky to be a real fan?
Tori's way over the line.
From Peter Buchanan in Kathersburg, Maryland. How many trophy husbands does Tori really need? Pablo Tori, Steve Kerr, and counting. What is Brian? Chopped liver? She's going to be really busy. From Brian in Dodgeville, Wisconsin, listening to the mailbag portion of the Tuesday podcast, did you just seriously say that getting to the new dry cleaner on Wisconsin is hard from your house? Now, I'm not from the D.C. area, but where exactly is Chatter? Isn't it at the corner of Jennifer and Wisconsin? How much harder could it be to get to this new dry cleaner than it is to get to Chatter? Please explain how much more difficult it could be leaving Chatter and turning right.
Can I say, Tony, it's a whole different thing being on to go to cleaners on Wisconsin.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that.
It's a lot of traffic.
After having gone to Connecticut Avenue,
it's a lot of traffic, but in truth... It's probably a mile away, a mile to a mile
What's
and a
half. What's the parking situation?
I don't know. It's near
Wisconsin.
That house of kebab, you know, up on Wisconsin.
Why did you go over there?
I haven't gone yet because it's supposed to be a great dry cleaner. What's the name of the dry cleaner?
Chatter. Oh, thank you.
Chevy Chase Valet. Chevy Chase Valet. Supposed to be great. From Mike from Burke, Virginia. Of course we want to get to this. I enjoyed Tori's rant on the nature of true Caps fandom. From her description, it appears that you can't be a true Caps fan without horses, a couple of Volvos, and a combined family income in excess of $500,000 annually. I mean, a true fan has to attend road games, hotels, planes, rent-a-cars, memo to Tori. That's called a vacation in Littleville. Maybe Tori could lend us a horse.
I would say the Caps,
love Tori.
The Caps contingent is quite suburban.
I love Tori.
Quite
if you're
suburban.
Out on your bike tonight, everyone, do wear white.
We're not going to be sung this year. We're the Stanley Cup champions. Yeah,
that's Ovechkin.
Same way without you in it. Well, I can't relate. If you want some time, I'm learning every day. I keep telling myself love is kind.
I've been mixing that for day without you in it. Well, I can't relate. If you want some time, I'm learning every day. I keep telling myself love is kind. Love is kind. This old world won't last. Don't pay attention at all. Find no place we can go. Maybe watch a fall. I get up in the morning. I'm here when you call. Won't you bring me in time? Won't you hold me close now? We're so good for each other. You can't have one without the one another. Well, I can't relate. If you want some time, you're learning every day. I keep telling myself love is kind. Love is kind.
Windows wide open. Don't have to tell you what a young man feels when he's playing his heart out on a Friday night. Simple notes flying off the walls, words rise to the ceiling as they meet their maker. Tape moves slowly, catches every sound, the breathing of every rhythm, every rhyme. Give me a woman with long dark legs who won't walk out when the words don't come. Give me a dozen songs to play and let me hear them in my mind. One day when perfect space and time. Give me that sacred sound of a wide open room. A wide open room. A wide open room. Here, well, she wouldn't believe it. She wouldn't listen to a word I say. Close the drapes, unplug the phone, and let these walls just have their way. Changing strings, change the pitch. It's an empty house and I'm not alone. In between the boards and studs, she's in there keeping time. And evermore she's mine. Evermore she's mine. Give me a woman with a soft, clear voice that won't fade out as the years go by. Give me a dozen songs to play and let her hear them in her mind. One day when I'm gone, she can just press play and give me what I am today. Give me that sacred sound of a wide open road.